We're here with my second live guest today, the masculine part of the show.
We'll see when I read there, Nick.
Well, no, he's got that deep, resonant voice. He's got it. Paul Sanderson, whom I've had on the show previously. Paul also had a tape out a couple of years ago, Biological Seasons.
Yeah, which is, I did.
And he's brought the book. Paul, how are you doing today anyway?
I'm doing all right. A little tired. Was out gigging last night.
You were out what?
Gigging last night with the band. So.
Oh, really? Now, what band are you in?
Blue Room.
Now, Blue Room's the band that I saw at the Jazz.
Yeah, we're out in Hamilton at the Mermaid Lounge, so I got about 4 hours sleep. So go easy on me today, Nick. But I'm here. It'll be fun. That's why my voice is so deep.
I see. Okay. How long have you been in this band?
It's been 5 years now.
Wow. Now, I did see you play some nice lead guitar licks, actually.
Thank you.
At the Jazz Festival, which is in the Beaches. Paul and I have known each other for a number of years. I actually had Paul here, it was 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I think in Biological Seasons, they just put the tape together.
That's true, yeah.
And read from that. What was the... Did you have an idea of promoting that tape and being semi-well-known on the pop scene at all? I'm not the pop scene, the poetry scene. Or was that just something you did for yourself? Was it something you wanted to do?
I think it was a bit of both. I had done the book and had access to studio time, so I thought it would be an interesting way to use that. And it did get some radio airplay, and people seem to like it. It's a very straight read. It's not backed by any musical accompaniment at all, just a straight poetry reading, but I enjoyed doing it. And yeah, I'd do it again if I get a chance.
Now, just to let people know, I keep mentioning you're an entertainment lawyer. What does an entertainment lawyer do?
Well, my definition of an entertainment lawyer is we work strictly in the music industry, and I'd say a good 80% of what I do during the day is to draft and negotiate and advise with respect to specific music industry-related contracts. Other people would define it in a more corporate sense, but we work from everyone from the street level on up. But we certainly don't do a lot of corporate tax or that type of advising. Some of the larger firms would say that's entertainment law, but that's not the way we would define it.
No, to have that combination, I just find you fascinating because you're an entertainment lawyer, you're also a musician, and you're also a poet, which, I mean, to me, especially the entertainment lawyer, seems like it's way out over here, and the poetry man is way here. Is it closer than what most people would assume?
I guess it is for me. I don't think it is for everyone, but I've always felt that people are, in essence, polymorphs, if you will. They have all sorts of divergent interests and often don't have the time or the inclination to pursue them. But I've had the luxury having my own firm to be able to do that. So I'm doing that, and I also am very, very, very active in photography.
That was your photograph.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Photography as well.
Oh wow. A mini Renaissance man. One last question, and folks, we will get to Paul's poetry. We actually have quite a long show for both guests today because Cat Low Life couldn't make it. That's his real name, by the way. I know Paul's looking at me like, what the hell?
Lots of stuff here, though, Nick. I can keep reading for a long time. Or talking, for that matter, whatever you like.
One last question. We're going to have a show on rap. Is it crap or is it poetry? What's rap and hip-hop to you? Is that just a new form of populist poetry? Or is it junk?
I think so, yeah. No, okay. Not at all. I think there's a lot of good poetry in rap, hip-hop. And I think it's probably just an issue of the times whereby the pop music industry goes through cycles, and this is one that we're in now. We're in the... and have been for a while in the rap hip-hop era.
Okay. Why don't we turn the dial over to Paul. Paul Sanderson reading from his opus's works, Paul Sanderson on CIUT. Paul.
This is a poem that I wanted to start the read off today. It's called Poetry Reading. a short one. Worship in the church of words, baptized in the religion of language, mesmerized by the poet-priest, holy communion, poetry reading, catharsis. This is one that I was prompted to submit to Hindenburg Press. It's not published yet. I'm not sure if it will be, but this is directly in relation to September 11th. It's called September 11th, 2001. After those few moments when hijacked planes bombed the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, TV retina-burning, psych-scorching images of twin office towers exploding, office workers and professionals plummeting to concrete death, played over and over in the media. Mass uncertainty, edginess, numbness set in. We sought comfort in the mundane, in the routine, in the familiar. We sought out close friends, family. We sought distractions. We tried to focus on what is real, on what is good, on what now has meaning, on what is civilized. We talked about it over and over, and we grieved. After those few moments, an eerie, mournful calm overwhelmed, and this image, a close-up of a suicide pilot in the cockpit, slamming into steel and glass, replayed over and over again in my mind. After those few moments, new mantras of the media emerged. Osama bin Laden, Taliban, the war against terrorism is the Third World War. The new reality became warmongering, jingoism, wariness of strangers, the sound of planes and office towers. Polarization, whose side are you on? After those few moments when our world was utterly shaken, our perceptions shifted irrevocably, like the inexorable movement of the hands of time on the doomsday clock. And now a more, less universal note, more personal. It's called Death of Our Cat. 11:10 p.m., dry nose, lethargy, heavy breathing, low moans. Phone call to emergency clinic. Don't wait till morning. Bring him in right away. I pet him, no response. Loose bowel movements, last memory, he is forced into the pet taxi. No goodbye, he'll be back in the morning, of course. 11:50 p.m. at the clinic, his gums are white, not pink. No oxygen, breathing heavy, we're losing him. The vet calls, 1:30 a.m., 2:30 a.m., 4:30 a.m., three heart seizures, bleeding spleen, cancerous tumor. We've done all we can. Empty water bowl, empty food bowl, remove cat litter, bring home the empty pet taxi. At night, hear his cries, imagination. Feel the presence of gone. He's here, but not here, not on the sofa. No childlike cry for catnip in the morning. He's not there in the middle of the night, petting him, finding comfort when I lie awake. This next one's a little more abstract. What if, it's called. What if you got up one morning and didn't want to see the sunrise, or even see the sun at all? What if you refused your gender? What if you didn't want the leaves to fall? Would you be crying, or just push the limits? What if? Do I have time for a long one here, Nick?
Yep.
This is a more prose-like poem. It's called I Went North. It describes, I guess in some detail, the experience of working in a lumber camp when I was 19. A couple of background notes here to kind of understand some of the language that lumberjacks have. Bucking is cutting logs into 8-foot lengths. Poplar trees are felled and then bucked after the evergreens are cut. Poplars are left standing and more easily skidded in group for harvest as lumber after the forest is cleared. Evergreens are used for pulp and paper. Chico is a widowmaker, a dead branch hung up in a tree. They can be especially dangerous since they fall without warning when a tree is felled or when a strong wind blows. Slasher, a lumberjack, is called a slasher. Slashers fell the trees with chainsaws and limb the branches off so that the skidder can more easily remove the trees from the bush and stack the logs in a clearing to be trucked or shipped by rail to the pulp and paper mill. A skidder works the machine and is also called a skidder that looks like a tractor and hauls the cut and limb timber from the bush. A skidder is paid more than a slasher because a special driver's license is required. A skidder is considered a semi-skilled worker. So that's kind of the background notes to this poem. It's called I Went North. In the summer of 1975, I was 19, a lumberjack in a camp in northern Ontario. I was trying to prove myself, trying to make some money to get to Europe. I had a romantic notion of hard physical labor. Lumberjack, fisherman, miner. I imagined I could be all three. The money was supposed to be good, $300 to $400 per day. I worked for Nuevo Timber, the company that supplied pulp for the paper used to print the New York Times. We were paid by the size of each butt of timber felled at the end of the day. I believed that every log I cut, I was closer to Europe. I remember the heat, the sweat. They said the fumes of the chainsaw would keep the horseflies away. But in summer, the dense forest cut right through the thick lumberjack shirts we wore, and the flies bit right through them too. In winter, slashing was easier. In 6 feet of snow, the limbs fell off the fallen trees at minus 50 degrees Fahrenheit. I wasn't interested in that. Our day started at 4 a.m. Stars and vestiges of the northern lights still in the sky. It was freezing cold. Our bunk beds and cabins looked like World War II barracks. We were wakened by what sounded like an air raid siren. Showered and were at breakfast by 4:45. Ham and pies, pancakes, sausages, bacon. The food had to be good, or the workers would leave for other camps. We packed our own lunches. We were bused to the sites off the Algoma Central Railway to work in the virgin forest by 7 a.m. Bus back by 5, dinner by 6, in bed again by 8. Beasts of burden. I was alone all day except every 20 to 30 minutes. When the skidder collected the logs, like the other slashers, I'd cut up to 200 evergreens, whole swatches of forests felled in a single day. I remember the isolation at night, restless thoughts. I thought I was losing my mind. Not being able to sleep made it harder to work the next day. My co-workers were either Quebecois, young like me, or older, divorced with drinking problems, or recent Portuguese immigrants working hard to bring their families to Canada. They'd laugh and tell work stories, how an 18-year-old slasher lost his leg the first day in the job, of family men dying when a Chico fell. A tree was felled on me in the manpower course, training me for camp. It knocked me down, knocked off my hard hat, and knocked the wind out of me. I was pissed off, but unhurt. My friend wasn't so lucky. Wedged between two trees, the springy poplar he was bucking whipped back, hit his leg, and lamed him. I soon realized, stay long enough and you'll get seriously hurt. It snowed September 3rd, Labor Day. I began the hitchhike home to Toronto, let go by the company. I felt proud I passed the manpower training course. Toughed it out for a summer, but felt there was more to prove, but I had to move on. I was looking for a $4 per hour factory job, better than the $2.10 per hour average I earned as a slasher. I was still saving for Europe.
This is Nick Beat, and you are listening to Mr. Paul Sanderson, a poet, guitarist, and also an entertainment lawyer and photographer, and I wish I didn't know. Paul, just before we're coming up to an ad pretty soon, and then Peter Verity is a friend of us all, Canadian singer-songwriter, has a song called Aftermath on his new CD we're going to play later on in the show, a little bit after the ad. You know, Paul, endings, one after another, the poems are and ends of the life of the trees, your sanity's going, your poor pet, your cat, and of course the towers, what they symbolize, ending, 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 and yet you're codifying it with language, as if it's going to keep, in a way, it's like a new beginning. I don't know. That's sort of how I hear it, is like a way of coming to terms with it. Is that what you've been doing in each of these pieces? Do they serve
that? That's an interesting way to put it, Nick. I think you're right. Yeah, I think in my writing, trying to use it as some type of therapy to try and understand what we've gone through and, you know, synthesize it, adjust it, move on. It's all part of the journey. I also look at them as, I'd like to think that everyone has an ending that's also a jumping off point. It's not static. It's food for other thought, too. You go, oh, it ended that way, but what if you did this? Or what if this happened? So that's, in a lot of ways, there's kind of an analogy there in photography. I like to think that it's a defining moment, too.
Yeah.
Because it's still, but at the same time, it's pregnant with possibilities as well.
The other thing I noticed in your piece is that the sense of helplessness before what's happening. The cat, you can't do anything more for him. I mean, what happened in New York, there's a feeling of helplessness there too. The feeling of helplessness in the wilderness. You're there. What are you going to do? And yet, in the end, you've codified it again. You're writing it down, forming it, giving it form and shape as a way of like almost, well, I guess, not. You're not helpless. You're a poet. You're an artist. Is that? Am I getting close, or am I off on this huge tangent?
I think you're doing great, Nick. Keep going. We don't often think about these parts of it.
We're talking to Paul Sanderson on CIUT, and we're going to break for a bit of an ad, a song, and later, of course, will be Fuckerman. I really want to thank you, Paul. Those poems are really moving tableaus for us to hear. Thank you. So much for being on CIUT's Owl. This is Nick B. We're going to break for an ad, and then hear Peter Verite's Aftermath from High Flying, the CD. See you in a bit.
Right. This is something I was working on this morning, so I thought I'd bring it in. It's actually a musical lyric, but I dabble with that too. So it's called Sensible Shoes. Holes in my pockets, shine on my shoes. I just got new sensible shoes. No crazy snakeskin or reversible leather. These are shoes for all kinds of weather. Don't need a suit or a fancy car. I got shoes. I can go real far. Miles and miles walking home to you. No blisters on my feet. I got sensible shoes. I'm feeling good from my head down to my shoes. I'm walking proud in my sensible shoes. I'm in my own groove, got nothing to prove. I'm feeling fine in my sensible shoes. I live my life the way I choose, walking for miles in my sensible shoes. I'm feeling good, got nothing to lose. I'm going all the way in my sensible shoes. Don't need to be rich with lots of gold. Walking in my shoes, I'm at peace with my soul. Even millionaires get the blues, but I'm okay in my sensible shoes.
Whoa! Was this the one that was written? Like,
yeah.
This? Oh yeah. Okay. This is a today thing, folks.
Just today.
It's so contemporary. It just comes.
And
right
so
out.
Old at the same time. It's a blues tune, actually.
Is it really?
With a twist. Well, my version of it. Yeah.